How good does it get, SK?
Why not us, Charlie?
Today, live from the Pinecrest Inn, it's The Smiley Show. So long, everybody.
This is The Smiley Show.
This is The Smiley Show. Big thanks to Dan Hicks there for bringing us in. And
I was in a trance watching it. I enjoy watching it every time.
It gets the blood flowing a little bit. Gets the juices flowing.
That's right.
Yeah, it's good. And I think that's our second technically soundish dismount.
Yeah.
2 weeks on the live. So
pretty good for us.
Don't let us get hot, man. We're going for the turkey next time. So.
Oh, happy golf season, by the way.
Happy golf. Why? So why is now the
football's over?
Oh, true. True.
Nobody's got an excuse.
What a stinker of a game that was.
Yeah, I'm just not into the NFL quite like other people are. You know, I mean college football territory. I mean, I was into my squares game, you know, which first time I'm like 1 for 100 in my life, and somehow I won on the 2-0 square, which I saw and I was like, oh, of course, you know, that's classic. I get that square and happen to win. So
happy,
nice to win my first square ever.
That's it. That's like hang the banner in the rafters. First square won, Smiley Kaufman.
I can't 30 plus years. No. How many squares you won? How many can I buy? It's just I can't help myself. And it's mainly because I'm not like taking anything on the games. It's like, this is my action. Just the randomness of a roulette squares game is what I enjoy about the Super Bowl.
I needed to see a little bit more from our guy, Drake May, but we did get a Tar Heel connection. We got a Drake May to Matt Collins touchdown, which was, it was something. On the heels of, and I think my voice is back after Saturday night at the Dean Dome. I think we might be all the way back. That was Smiley. Let me tell you, about as electric as it gets to win in that fashion.
It's probably a good time to let you know that in the Duke, North Carolina rivalry, I always cheered for Duke growing up.
Mm.
You know where I like landed as a kid in all this. So happy for you. But also, can you at least treat our players right next time leaving the court? That's all I ask.
You seem like a JJ Redick guy. That makes it, that adds 100%. Up. That adds up.
I will say, was it Greg Paul? Was that a guy?
Paulus.
Greg Paulus.
Yeah.
He didn't really do it quite as much as JJ did it for me. And then honestly, the Grayson, what was his name?
Grayson Murray.
Yeah. Didn't necessarily do it for me. But so I kind of always cheered for Duke, but it kind of, ever since the NIL, all that started happening, started caring less and less about this game.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we're talking a lot about sports we are caring less and less about, the NFL, college basketball. I'm on the same wavelength as you on many of those things. How about we talk about a sport that we do care about, Smiley, because we had some golf action this week, not only on the course, a ton of storylines on and off. We had some bait being dangled. They want to bring back the players' major conversation, Smiley. They're going to make us talk about it. So that's out in the ether again. But man, I mean, we have, first of all, we have not one, but two top 20 players in the world to discuss who won twice in their last three starts. Chris Goddard is now fifth in the world. Patrick Reed is now 17th in the world. Just unbelievable stuff from both of those guys. And you were there on site at TPC Scottsdale for the W and Phoenix Open. Watching Chris Goddard win, obviously won the season opener at the Sony Open, and now his second win in three starts at the WM Phoenix Open. It's also his third win of his last 11 starts, dating back to the 2025 Scottish Open. As mentioned, jumps to fifth in the OWGR. He is 18th in the Data Golf rankings.
Did you already say he jumped to fifth?
Fifth.
Yeah. Whew.
Fifth.
How about that, right?
That top five now is so interesting to me, because I believe off top it is Scotty, Rory, and then it's either Tommy or Justin Rose. One of those two, flip flop 3-4, and now Chris Goddard. And if you told me at this point in the season that after we finished 2025, is this a new big three, Scotty, Rory, Tommy, and you're like, hey, the other two guys are going to be, it would have probably taken me 100 guesses, maybe more, to say Justin Rose and Chris Goddard. It was unbelievable stuff.
Gosh, but I'm here for it.
Love it. And boy, it's deserved for both those guys. Justin Ray Golf, who Justin Ray Golf is his Twitter account. Justin Ray is the human being who is the unofficial official show researcher. Great stat. We're going to have a number of stats we're going to drop on you from Justin throughout the show. But the most PGA Tour wins in the last three seasons, Scottie Scheffler has 14, Rory McIlroy has 5, and Chris Goddard has 4. Wild.
14.
Wild to think about. Scott's the Scotty number is
The one honestly to break down there, but Goddard and Roy just about being tied is really cool too.
Well, and Scotty, and we'll get to Scotty a little bit later, but I mean, coming down the stretch after opening the way he did on Thursday, you're like, is he gonna find a way to win this golf tournament again? Like, this can't be possible at the rate we're going. But he gave it a good run, and he posted 15 before, of course, Goddard came in and posted 16 and ended up in that playoff. But I just, to start with Goddard, I mean, such an amazing ascent on a number of different levels. And I remember talking after Sony where you were just, you know, breaking down the way he's continued to add to his game, you know, in some ways through exposure to other top tour pros in a number of different settings. Specific to this week, what impressed you the most about the way Chris got this tournament won?
Oh, gosh. Well, that's first off, huge congrats to Chris. I mean, I didn't even know he was going to win the golf tournament until I was like, wait, he's about to be in a playoff? It was the most bizarre thing ever. It just felt like it was Hideki or nobody else, you know, right there towards the end, especially just the way he was maneuvering himself around the golf course. And here comes Chris Goddard up on Sunday and does a little, let's see, how did he finish? We got a, hold on, this is round one I'm looking at. Was it 4 birdies in his last 5? Is that right?
Yeah, let me pull that stat for you as well. I mean, really, you know, where I want to go is we kind of break down his round, but the birdie on 18 on his 72nd hole in regulation hits a drive right of the cart path over where the fans are standing. Yeah. It has to have I guess he could have posted 15, then would have been theoretically in a playoff with Scotty and would need Hideki to drop 2 shots. But the shot he hits over there, 130 yards to give himself 3 feet for birdie and makes that to post 16. Unbelievable stuff.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Unbelievable. And it all kind of starts with me with Chris Goddard up heading into this week. You know, he gets the pairing, right? You get the Scottie Scheffler Thursday, Friday pairing with Jordan Spieth. That's a big spot. You know, there's a lot of first time tour winners. I know he's not a first time tour winner, but, you know, getting into that upper echelon pairing where you're up against Scottie on a Thursday, Friday, it's like a Sunday on a Thursday. And very few people have to deal with it. Scotty deals with it every day, but other people that play with Scotty aren't used to maybe the crowds that he attracts week in and week out or day in and day out. And so what impressed me so much about Chris was that he was able to get off to a really hot start on Thursday and be leading the golf tournament after the first round, beating Scottie Scheffler by 10 on Thursday. Shoots 30 on the backside, shoots 63, no bogeys. And I think what that tells you is just how mentally prepared he was for that day. And it tells you a lot about him as a player, the swagger that we continue to talk about, the freedom that he seems to be playing with right now, really winning that Sony Open. He talked about it, how much more freedom it gives him. He actually mentioned too how it gives him just the financial stability to be in the top, you know, making 5 years on the PGA Tour, the full benefits in retirement. He like mentioned that. You're like, oh, I guess he could be thinking about that. And he was thinking about it somewhat. Now it's like, all right, I'm going to be pretty loaded the rest of my life. Might as well just go make more money at this point.
Do you see his tweet on that, by the way?
Where pay me my money.
Number four. So good.
Yeah. And so that Thursday round, really, really impressive. And then, you know, kind of sleepwalk through Friday and Saturday. And I think that was probably the most impressive part about the week to me. You know, we all know that he can do what he did on Thursday and Sunday, mm-hmm. where he mm-hmm. can go and take it deep and make a bunch of birdies, drive it way down there. But it's more so keeping himself in the golf tournament, even though he didn't necessarily have his best on Friday mm-hmm. and Saturday. I think that's the sign of a player maturing, realizing that, hey, I'm maybe I don't need to push here. I don't need to have a 5-shot lead. I just need to stay in the golf tournament. And I thought Chris did a really good job of managing that on Friday and Saturday, although maybe the putts weren't falling or the birdies weren't coming. And he just kind of waited for his time, and it showed up at the right time on Sunday. Let it loose on the last five holes, gave himself an opportunity, and lucky for him, Hideki had the case of the I don't know where the ball's going off the tee.
Yeah, I wonder too if you've seen a specific, like you're speaking there to the mental, to the approach, the game strategy of playing on tour. If there's an area of his game that you've seen grow the most since that went to the Scottish Open, because just thinking about the last two holes he plays of the tournament where, as mentioned, hits it way right, hits an incredible, you know, wedge 130 yards out to give himself that birdie to knock in. And then the playoff hits a drive that everyone, including the TV broadcasters, think, oh, that's going to land in that last fairway bunker.
Covers
a fairway bunker, 349 yards. And then rightfully hits a safe wedge shot, knowing that Hideki has to make a, you know, whatever 20 footer for par to stay in the playoff, hits it 27 feet, but then jars that putt for birdie to win the tournament, two birdies in a row on the 18th there at TPC Scottsdale to get it done. Is there an area of his game? Like we know, you know, driving distance has been his plus, his superstar skill his entire career, but where have you seen him grow the most in maybe another area of his game since that Scottish Open win?
Well, before I answer that, I think it's worth pointing out that the first time that he played with Rory McIlroy and Scottie Scheffler was, so Rory was that Sunday at the Scottish Open, goes and shoots 66 and wins by two. And then the first time he plays with Scottie Scheffler, he goes out and shoots a bogey-free 63, beats him by 10. I think that side of it for me, the confidence and the mental aspect and just his overall confidence that he plays with, I think is the most growth that I've seen from a player for players that we always want to see take that next step. He's answered the bell right away. You know, sometimes it takes guys, you know, 10 attempts to be like finally comfortable playing against the world's best, but he doesn't care. He's like, dude, this is what I got. I'm going to go out and do my best. I'm not going to put too much pressure on myself. And I think that's the jump that we've seen from maybe early in his career to now. Now, sure, he's probably gotten better in different aspects of his game, but that to me is the huge thing that Chris has right now that so many players are trying to get, which is playing with freedom, confidence, and growing in the mental side of the game. And just reminds me so much of a Brooks Koepka type.
The last thing that I just want to hit on the way out with Chris is looking at the one area of his game where he can maybe benefit from some consistency. Because if you look at the strokes gained categories this week, he's first tee to green. He's sixth off the tee. He's fifth in approach. He's second around the green, but he's 50th in putting. But then if you go look at his full stats profile, not the limited small sample size of just a four-round tournament, you look at it overall, he's above average in putting. And it looks like he has this sort of back-and-forth contrast of week to week, he'll have like a pop week where his stats are way off the chart, and then he'll have a negative week the following week. And even round to round, like on Thursday, he was, I think it was fifth or sixth in the field in putting, and then the next day he's 119th on Friday. So is there something specific to putting you see where he could develop a little more consistency there to where it's almost similar to Scotty, and that if he pluses this thing up, he's going to be entrenched in the top 20 in the world for some time to come?
Yeah, I've talked to Chris and his team a little bit about all of his short game stuff that he's worked on and just goals heading into this season. And Chris had told me that the main parts of his game that he was working on were mainly wedges heading into this year, and then also working from like 10 to 25 feet. He said that was an area in which he's worked a bunch on. So, and also speaking with his short game coach, Tim Yelverton, it works with his putting. He said that really the Sony like putted it well, but then when he got to the Farmers, he started standing too close to the golf ball. His eyes had gotten too far over the ball. He said that was an adjustment they made after the Farmers, and clearly it worked this week. So just managing, you know, set up day to day. And I talked to Tim about this. I was like, it's so easy for guys to get
always set up, right?
to get their calibrations off. And I think Chris is probably learning how to, you know, avoid just those basic setup mistakes to where he can be a little bit more consistent day to day, like you're talking about. But also I found interesting too, is that heading into this week, you know, I talked about TPC Scottsdale and around the green, it's kind of the challenges that you might have, a lot of bump shots. You know, you don't typically get good enough lies because of the firmness of the greens to be able to fly something onto the green chip shots with a bunch of spin, that first bounce is just so big. And a lot of times it's, you know, you can have the whole, you know, depth of the green to use, but most of the time you end up short-sided around this place and you're just constantly hitting these bump shots, which I think caters to Chris Goddard's game because, you know, you look at his full swing and you see he's got his hands pressed so far forward, that shaft is forward. And throughout his bag, it kind of is emulated that way. You know, his chipping looks this way, that handles forward, the putting sometimes can look that way. And so where does that beneficial? Well, of course, like when you have a setup like that, bump shots, bunker shots, rough shots are fairly easy. You know, like that's where his bread and butter is. Like he's very, very good pitcher of the golf ball when he can, you know, play the shots low with some spin. You know, he's awesome and out of the bunkers. You go watch him slap bunker shots. It's really impressive to watch. But the shot that he was trying to develop this week was something that was up in the air more. And he had Joe Mayo come take a look at it this week. Ooh. And Joe had said that he's like, dude, I wouldn't mess with any of your stuff. You know, if you want to hit a shot up in the air, just move the ball up, move the handle back. But I don't want anybody to tell you to change what you're doing. Like what you're doing is good enough. And sometimes like that type of coaching, like Joe could have gotten in there. It's like, you need to do this, this, and this. And Chris Goddard probably wouldn't have won the golf tournament this week because the player's thinking too much. So just to get that, you know, just that feel of, okay, this is how I want to hit it, but you know, my stuff is good enough as it is. It's not surprising for me to see that Chris Goddard won this week after speaking with him, his coaches, and just the confidence that he has. And really Brett McCabe's been helping him with his mental side of the game. And he said he's just continued to make progressions in that side of the game and playing with freedom.
There are two things in there that I find really interesting that relate back to conversations you've had with tour pros on this podcast a number of different times. One is just the, if you do something and it's kind of your go-to calling card and it's great for one part of the bag, it has this sort of flow and impact into other parts of the bag. And like, how do you kind of solve for that? And it's interesting that Joe Mayo, you know, one of the best on tour for a reason, was able to kind of come in and say, hey, don't change your bread and butter. Just feel confident in doing maybe these small things, but stick to what you are. I think that's super interesting. And then second, for people like me, sicko putter tinkers, always trying to go to something different. If you're not rolling it well, oh, should I go to a broomstick? Should you go to the claw grip? It's like, you know what? Listen to all these tour guys talk about it. A lot of times, just make sure your setup is consistent on a day-to-day basis. That usually will shore up most of your issues. So good learnings for all of us out there who have the same affliction that I do. Moving on now to Hideki Matsuyama. And I see some comments in here on two things that I want to talk about. The first is obviously his play. The second is spectator, the whole issue with fans and what happened on the last two holes of this tournament. I think just on the play perspective, you can look at this two different ways. It's of course disappointing to lose a tournament in this fashion. Bogey on the 72nd, hits his tee ball in the water on the 73rd hole to make that playoff, a chance to win that playoff, considerably more difficult. But if you only hit 3 of 14 fairways on Sunday, I think it says a lot about the rest of your game that you're able to hang on, even make it into the playoff at all. If you go back and look at the stats for the week, 70th off the tee in strokes game, but second in approach, third around the green, third in putting. So just start by like extracting the positives for Hideki. You know, obviously disappointed to lose, but what do you take away good from this week if you aren't able to lift the trophy at the end of it?
Well, it has to sting, you know, for Hideki to not win this golf tournament. He did so many amazing, great things, veteran things on a Sunday where he didn't have it. And so often when players don't have their best on a Sunday in the final group, they don't win the golf tournament. There's too many other good players that are playing well on Sunday. And Hideki found, you know, three putts on the front nine where he made over 20 feet, two for par, one for birdie. And you're just like, this guy he just won't stop. You know, it was so fun to watch because you just felt like he was going to make these putts. And these greens too, they're not easy to read. They're very subtle. They roll perfectly, but Hideki seemed to be on point with them really the entire week. But yeah, you said it, the ball striking never looked, it looked crisp at times. Like he would swing long irons and you're just like, whoa, that was so flush. And then other times throughout the week, it just felt like he was not quite all the way there on a specific shot shape with the driver. Like it was left misses at times. Then he would be pushing it. So two-way misses that were that were just enough to – they weren't bad enough for the most part to get him in trouble besides really the second hole. You know, he was pretty good about keeping the ball relatively in play, playing the angles, which you had to do. You had to play the angles out there, missing it on the right or the correct side of the fairway. But then eventually it just bit him. You know, it was – you know, he ran out of luck, I should say, because it really did feel like he had a horseshoe in his bag throughout the whole day, catching some breaks and just making the most of what he had. And I thought it was going to be enough to win the golf tournament. I really did, because of how composed he remained throughout the day. Just stoic, man. And there's a reason why he's a major champion. There's a reason why he's won 10 plus times on the PGA Tour. And we saw it firsthand yesterday. It's a shame he didn't get it done, because it would have really been a cool testament of just how incredible of a golfer overall Hideki is, top to bottom.
The shot he hit from the desert on 13 was just unbelievable. He hits it right again. And it was funny, they showed a replay after where he like backs into a cactus or some sort of prickly bush. So, whoa, what's going on there? He just slings this high cut. It's just, again, if you're driving it that poorly, the ability to, oh, here we go. Hold on. We're having some fun tech stuff here on the stream. Is he's back. You're back. I don't know what that was all about, but we saved it.
Hello.
Hello. Hello again. But yeah, I mean, just that shot on 13, I think, was a great encapsulation of that's how you make it to a playoff at 16 right. under if you have nothing off the tee. And that's pretty impressive stuff. So the place I want to go to next, as mentioned, there's a question here, just thoughts on spectator interruptions affecting Hideki. And I think this is such an interesting topic because it's specific to what happened to him. And if you did not see, you know, don't know what we're referencing here. There were two shots that were obviously very pivotal down the stretch that he was interrupted in the middle of playing them. So the first was on the 18th hole. He's got a par putt that would win him the tournament. Mm-hmm. Someone yells something in the middle of a stroke. He stops and replays it. The second was on the tee in the playoff. He does like a Tiger Woods, like pumps it in the downswing and stops it. And I think that so in the social media, you know, people covering, reporting, trying to gather what happened, piecing together videos out there, and all this, of course, is unverified, but what we can find on it is that the first one was intentional. It was maybe someone that was streaming. We had streamer issues earlier in the week where a guy was out there, paid someone $100 to yell something in Mackenzie Hughes' backswing. The second was a very unfortunate accident, as far as we can tell, with a security guard dropping a chair on accident in the middle of his swing. But I just want to talk about this event in general and the crowds it generates, because I think that, you know, similar to life, not everything is just a black and white situation, right? Two things can be true. The first thing can be true that the Thunderbirds put on an amazing event out there that does some great stuff for the community. It's a really fun event. It's a unique atmosphere that played, you know, one time a year like this, a lot of guys can enjoy the sort of change of pace and the energy it brings, right? That can be true. What also can be true is because it's a unique event, you're inviting a fan in that might not be a golf fan, that might not have a ton of appreciation or understanding of the etiquette that surrounds the game. And that when those type of people show up, that you can have things like this happen. And I you know, the whole game growth thing we've talked about again and again, you know, just how you do it in the right way and how you educate these types of people. And I think, you know, the streaming thing, I'm not even going to say these people's names, but like, go look at the streamer and go look at the type of content he puts out, the guy on Friday, and you can make a judgment as to whether or not it's worth having a guy like that around the game of golf. Same thing with the guy on Sunday with Hideki's putt. Just go take a look at that guy and the way he handled the aftermath when he was confronted about it, and decide if you want that game and that person in and around the game of golf.
So the Hideki par putt was a similar thing?
It was not as high profile as a streamer, but it was, again, all unverified reports, but there's an Instagram video where a guy comes up and confronts this guy, and he was, you know, apparently had his phone going live or something and was streaming, yelled in the middle of that putt. And that's what we can gather as to what happened there. So I want to ask you about
shrink. Shrink the game.
All caps shrink. So I want to ask you about just how you feel about these incidents and then just the fans at large this week. Because in the past few years, we've seen some crazy incidents and things that had to be sort of reeled in. And it seemed like there was less of that this year. But where I want to start is this is something you suggested before. And I think we have a solve here, Smiley. I'm proposing ban phones. No phones at any golf tournament ever, unless you're a credentialed media person who is there to cover content. Because you know what you do if you do that? Everyone who's trying to do the whole look at me streamer thing, no interest in going to the golf tournament anymore. And perfect. See you later. Hope to never see you again. Like, I don't think that there is... I can't really think ever of a time where I've been on a golf course or a tournament. I'm like, you know what I really like to do is just like be on my phone right now. Like, so people who really care about the game and all that, like, just let's just get phones away from the game entirely. The Masters does it. We love that experience every single year. I don't want phones in golf anymore at all. And I think you solve a lot of these problems.
Now that's a take for all PGA Tour events. I was maybe for the majors, I think was a good place to start, but jumping straight into the deep end to Phoenix, that's a tough sell. That's a tough sell.
The people are with me. Augusta vibes everywhere. I mean, what don't people like about Augusta vibes? Like, everyone loves the Masters. You know what they do there? They don't have phones. Oh, wow. All of a sudden, it's the most polite and respectful spectator event that we have in professional golf. Why don't we just do that everywhere?
So, okay. So there's, I look at these in two lens as a fan.
Some people are also disagreeing.
Without a phone, fair. Without a phone, I do think I'd be concerned as a fan that I might take it to another level. I might have too much fun without a phone. It's like there's no more phone. When we would go ghost mode without the phones and go out to the bars back in the day, the best. Like, so that's something you have to consider.
What's so bad about that? What's so bad about that?
Again, you're not helping the problem here.
I mean, I think that I don't know. I just think a lot of these things are, you know, copycat type deals of, especially if you're inviting someone in who doesn't understand how the game, I guarantee you there were people that had tickets to this event who saw what happened on Friday with the first streamer. Like, oh, that was funny. It was hilarious. Like, I'm gonna go try to do something like that. Like, I'm not saying that directly connected to what this guy did to Hideki on Sunday, but this is the world we live in. It is what it is.
That DraftKings is right outside that deal. You know, that's the thing that you have to worry about. You know, as we've talked about it with people placing just tickets right before they get to the golf course and they show up, they're like, well, shoot, I'm three down. I got to find a way to get back into this and I can affect the outcome.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole other can of worms that I think is, you know, look, it's inevitable. I think a lot of these things is, would I like it to be different? Sure, I would. I could sit here and tell you 15 to 20 things I like to change about professional golf. Are those things going to change? They're not, for a number of different reasons. Gambling is one of them. It is what it is. It adds money to the ecosystem. And so you just kind of have to deal with it as it is. And again, I understand my no phone suggestion is insane, but at the same time, it's like, how, you're not going to go talk to these people individually and talk sense into them. Like, you're not like, you know, like, so what are you going to do? How about this? Bring back ghost mode. That's our new show drive. Bring back the ghost mode. I think, and I see a comment in here, and look, and it's fair. I'm not trying to make excuses for Hideki here. Like, he hit 3 of 14 fairways. Like, you know, I'm not saying that all of a sudden if he doesn't have a distraction, you know, he finds a fairway on 18. But this is the problem, is that we'll never know. We'll never know because something happened and it threw him off his concentration. And now, whether you like it or not, even the most mentally strong people in the world, they're going to get over that ball and their process has been interrupted. And that's the thing I hate, is like, we can't really clearly say yes or no, Hideki would have got this done without fan interruption. So it's tough, man. It's a tough scene. Should we do a little more cleanup on some other names in WM before we head out and talk a few additional topics? That sound good to you?
Yeah, 100%. Okay. I just think I just want to talk kind of briefly about TPC Scottsdale, because I think it's a golf course that I think, you know, we talk about just events that are fun to watch on TV. Every hole just feels like something really fun could happen outside of maybe the 14th hole, which Scottie Scheffler happened to make a putt from off the green from about 50 feet. But outside of like 14, you got 13's a par five that's, or actually, we'll see, you can go back to really every hole on the back nine at TPC Scottsdale is awesome. It is such a good golf course. They had this place firing. I mean, the greens were so firm this week. It made it so much about how precise you could be off the tee into the greens. And I think the element of challenge that these players were having to deal with, you know, where do I land it on the green, dealing with a little bit of wind, you know, greens that are really difficult to read, and then throw in just the craziness of the atmosphere. It's, you know, I can understand why some players don't like playing. I can understand why some fans don't like the craziness, but when you just look at TPC Scottsdale and what it provides, it's one of the best venues that they have on the PGA Tour for viewing purposes on a Sunday, because so many guys had a chance to win, which goes to what you're talking about with Thor. You know, he eagles the 15th hole, gets a 17 under. Remind you, the playoff was 16. Hello, Thor was right there. And he makes bogey at 16, makes bogey at 17, finishes at third, doesn't end up in the swing five. And so you have all these different storylines that were happening on Sunday. Goddard never felt like he was at the top of it. It was Hideki, Siwoo Kim, Thor. You had other guys like Pearson Cootie, Jake Knapp, Akshay Bhatia, Fitzy. And Goddard had felt like it was just a Thursday storyline, and that was it, because he had gone mute on Friday and Saturday. And then it was like, oh, by the way, here I am. So I just felt like, you know, Thor was a really interesting one to talk about, maybe because of just how good he is at golf. I mean, this is a guy that led the PGA Tour greens of regulation last year. He's a flusher of the golf ball, is starting to improve his putting, and hit four top fives last year, two runner-ups in his short career. Remember, this is his second and a half year, technically. You know, last year was his first full year, came off of Stanford and the PGA Tour U program the year prior. And what else do you want to see from a guy, right? And I loved his comments after the round, too.
Yeah, so I want to read those here. I quickly on the Scottsdale point, because I think it's so dead on. It's like the drama it builds on that back nine for a finish. I mean, there's a reason why I think it's 7 of the last 11 of these tournaments have finished in a playoff. You know, just coming, there's so much that can happen. And I saw some critique of the playoff format. Like, I would just love to see a 3-hole playoff. Like, I mean, That's a Super Bowl problem. And I get how you say, well, you could go to 16, but sudden death on a par three is a little bit hokey. So you could do, but it's tough. But I mean, can you imagine playoff starting? 18 is great, but I mean, a 3-hole playoff where you have the loudest and most intense par three in all of golf, a drivable par four.
Oh, it's great.
And then it'd be amazing.
It's great.
On Thor, I want to read a quote that you mentioned. So obviously makes eagle on 15 to take the outright lead. Because at that point, Hideki's at 16, and then bogeys at 16 and 17. He talked after he hit an 8-iron on 16 and said he maybe hit it too hard or had too much adrenaline in that moment, which is understandable. He was asked the question, what do you take away from it? What did you learn? He said, yeah, again, you put yourself in those positions more and more. You get more comfortable. You learn every single time whether you do well or, I mean, whether the result is good or bad necessarily. If you're talking about wins or losses, I don't think I failed out there. I'm just learning. So yeah, I put myself in that position. I was leading after 70 holes, 69 holes, whatever it was. I mean, we're inching our way closer and closer. It'll happen at some point. And it will happen at some point, Smiley. I thought that was a mature reflection on a guy that could have really beat himself up, but clearly has the game and the pieces coming together to win. I'd be shocked if he doesn't win this year on tour.
Me too. I would. He's not afraid to go low. Just a little bit more improved putting, good wedge play. There's no chance that he doesn't. Love this guy's game. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then a few other I want to hit on the way out. You mentioned this is another Justin Ray stat for you. The top 20 finishes in all four PGA Tour events in 2026. Pearson Cootie and Siwoo Kim. And Pearson, God bless Pearson Cootie, because he just played the first four of the season and finished. I think it was first in the AL in swing five.
Yeah, who was the swing five, by the way?
Let me pull that up right now as we're talking. But by virtue of that, Pearson now gets to play 6 straight weeks in a row.
Oh, so if you're in that Aeon Swing 5, it gets you into the next two events, basically?
AT&T and Genesis.
Wow, man, that is man, that Thor bogey on 17 proving even more costly.
Well, and I think, hold on, let me, I can never pull this thing the right way. Here we go. Swing 5, Thor drops. Thor was one, and now he dropped out of it entirely. Yeah, so it's Pearson Cootie, Ryo Hitsatsune, which, by the way, we need to have like a full-on Ryo discussion at some point in time. So I love him so much. Jake Knapp, Matt McCarty, and Patrick Rogers are the Swing 5 that get into both the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am and the Genesis Invitational.
Where did McCarty play good?
McCarty played good. Is it Farmers? Let me just pull up his results this season so I can give you that. He finished T55 at the Sony, T2 at the Amex, and T18 at the Farmers.
I was working Amex, and we didn't show a ton of it.
To note those two guys would play great this year.
That's even worse. He must have had like a good Sunday.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Had to have. Yeah. Well, it was interesting having Joel and Keith up there talking about Pearson.
Yeah.
You know, they were both just as high on Pearson as I was. And they said, similar to Thor, a guy that's going to win. I just love how simple his game is. Doesn't seem like the game is, it just comes so naturally to him, it looks like. You know, some guys, they're always working on things. To me, it looks like he can get after it, swings it hard, hits it straight. Led strokes gained off the tee in 2025. Now, granted, he's playing much easier golf courses. So it's kind of comparing, not necessarily comparing similar things between the golf courses Scotty and Rory are playing, but still, it just tells you how good of a driver the ball is. And that's, do you, at some point, is 5 and 6 weeks in a row too much? Or do you trust that, hey, Pearson Cootie played 32 times last year? He's built for this.
That's what, you know, because I'm thinking about it next week is, you know, we just keep riding him at one and done, like suggesting him every single week.
Yeah.
And specific to, I mean, you saw it at the Farmers. If you go back and look at his stat profile, putts great on putt. Mm-hmm. So it's like, here we go. We're going to Pebble and Spy. Should love him here. But it's like, can we put him in like a cryogenic preservation chamber? Like, what can we do to make sure Pearson doesn't just run out of gas? Because, I mean, but he did it last year. He played 15 times on the Corn Ferry Tour and earned a status that way. And then another, whatever, 15 or 17. So he has the Iron Man gene. It's just that how long can one team play?
Same with Siwoo. So we'll see how Siwoo goes too. But before we kind of transition out of this Phoenix Open, the last thing that I want to kind of bring up to you is just having some conversations with folks around the WM Phoenix Open and the future of that event and what the future schedule looks like for the PGA Tour. So if you're listening, you know, there's all the conversations the PGA Tour are having about 2027 and the scheduling, and where is the WM Phoenix going to slate in? Is it going to be, you know, similar to where it has been? You know, go Sony, Amex, Phoenix Open. From what I've gathered, the PGA Tour wants to start out with their big opening day, and Phoenix Open currently is slated to be number one. That is where they want to start. They want to start with a bang. And I think right now they're trying to figure out the scheduling, if it's going to be Super Bowl weekend. I think I've heard suggestions of, hey, would you be okay doing it after the Super Bowl, completely not even mess with football? Phoenix Open has no interest in that. But what I find interesting is that seems fine. Like, having it during the Super Bowl weekend, like, that's where they want it. And I can understand why Phoenix wants it there. And for the amount of, like, it's so different, you know, like the NFL has all of these different franchises and teams. And this is where you run into the issues of Rolap running the PGA Tour like the NFL, where things are different. You know, Rolap probably is walking around and thinking, man, we need to replicate this everywhere, right? Like, let's do these big events, big cities, having all these great crowds and just huge build outs. But you're so reliant on these tournaments and the tournament directors and these big organizations to be able to do these things. And that's the difference in the NFL. They have the stadiums, they have the owners to be able to provide all of these things week in and week out with a site that ain't going anywhere, a stadium, where these golf tournaments, you know, we talked about the scheduling. It's like, how are you going to go into Chicago and say, hey, let's go to Chicago Golf Club every year? And then Rob's like, wait, why can't we go there? You know, that seems like a great place. So I think there's a lot to learn It's like we want to go to
Pine Valley. Let's build it. Let's go to Pine Valley. There he is.
We want to go to these big markets and these big venues, but very few can replicate what they do in Phoenix. I mean, to even a tenth degree, right? For what Phoenix is able to accomplish.
I think you make a ton of great points there. And it's, you know, again, it's funny how all these conversations tie together of like, what would we like this to be versus like, what are the economic realities of a major professional sports league? And so here's the good news. If you're a fan of tour golf and you want to see it, you know, continue to be at this level or even expand and grow, Brian Rolapp's going to be really good at that. Like, he's got the whole playbook from the NFL, that this nebulous product we talk about week in, week out. He's going to be very good at enhancing that product and getting more, you know, cash inflows to the league and making sure that it not only survives and thrives. Here's the bad news, is that could be at the expense of a lot of intricacies and traditions and
yes.
the things that make yes. the PGA Tour what the PGA Tour is.
Yeah.
And that means cutting events we love at venues we love. You know, I think it's like there will be some overlap on venue. It's a risk. And there will be some overlap on a venue that is good, historic, caters to, you know, interesting golf, and one that is commercially viable that people want to tune in and see, which I think is the direction that Rolapp seems to want to go, to place certain events in certain places and times of the calendar where it's like, I'm definitely going to, you know, we've heard like the rumor that Pebble Beach could host the Tour Championship. It's like, okay, like that's definitely going to get people to tune in because people love that place and that's a high stakes tournament, right? But I just wonder how does a 22 to 25 event schedule feel? And is it, you know, what's happening when they're not playing? And, you know, how does my experience as a fan of golf change on those weeks when there's not, you know, it's a really tough one that you almost have to say, you know, this is the way that all sports leagues are going.
Well, the eligibility is a totally different conversation that we've had about trying to keep your stars in one place. What happens when you lose them? You know, they drop down and all of a sudden you're not with that That's same right. crop of stars year in and year out. But, you know, if the PGA Tour wanted to try to replicate something similar to Phoenix week in and week out at all these big cities, because like you're talking about having, you know, big build outs with a lot of people with stars at golf courses that people care about, that's a winning formula, right? Like, yes. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. The problem is that the PGA Tour is having to lean on these tournament organizations and tournament directors to try to fundraise something that seems unattainable in some markets, right? That totally. Some people feel like they're overpaying for what they're getting at some events. So you get to a schedule that is a signature event model with 100 guys playing 25 times. I think the PGA Tour is going to have to invest in this if they want it to look the way they want with, you know, is that cutting the Champions Tour? I don't know. If they're already losing money on there, would they rather invest it into the PGA Tour to enhance all these big events to make a profit? And that's in a private equity type of situation that they are in currently. At some point, it is about having a return on investment in private equity, which isn't sometimes the best answer in all this.
Hey, can you imagine, dude, cutting the Champs Tour right as like Tiger's about to potentially play events on that tour? Because that's one that like
they're losing money on it.
they're losing money on it, right? But I think that part of that is the way that they, you know, sold that TV contract or rolled it in with the PGA Tour. And so if I'm Brian Rolapp and I have some sort of tangential control over that via my, you know, roles ahead of the PGA Tour, I'd say, well, geez, can we go split that TV contract out and try to sell it at a higher value for the events that Tiger's going to play? Because now all of a sudden we can make it profitable.
Well, now that the network's going to have to invest more into it too, because they'll have to invest, you know, 10 more cameras. They'll That's have right. to have more personnel. Right. More, and even the PGA Tour, just think about it from a security standpoint. How much more security that they're going to have on site for when Tiger Woods shows up. Let's say, hey, we're happy to bring Phil back into the fold. Now all of a sudden you have a legitimate like PGA Tour old guys, which they got to invest in. And do they want to keep investing in it at that rate? Or do you just keep pumping money back into your main product, which I don't know. I mean, technically the eyeballs follow Tiger Woods. So that's a formula that's kind of worked.
That's another product. I mean, like, it's something. So it's all very interesting stuff. I just, you know, I think the one thing that's nice, no matter what, is you'll forever have the sanctity of the four majors and the Ryder Cup too, in a certain extent, depending on you give me that look, because I know there have been discussions like the Ryder Cup, you could sell it, maybe the PGA Tour tries to acquire it. But for the most part, like, we're going to have. Or the fifth major. Do you want to do fifth major now, or do you want to do Patrick Reed and live first? Should we just dive into fifth major?
I think we just acknowledge that Patrick Reed is playing really good golf. I mean, I think there's nothing more to be said. This guy's on a second, lost in a playoff 2 weeks ago.
Battlefield promotion is
hilarious bit. I read on Twitter.
Battlefield promotion's amazing. I'd also like to lobby for an official name change to that tour. Can we call it the DP Reed World Tour now that he's won two out of three times? I thought this is the one thing that I just wanted to mention in this context is that. So this is a great stat from Rick Gaiman, who's Rick Rungood, of course, on Twitter and Instagram. And I just want to share this image that he posted of these are, let's see here. Let me reconfigure our screen here. All right. That was not how I want it to look. And I don't know if that's how I want it to look either.
I can kind of see it.
Okay. So effectively, what you see the dates cut off on the side here, but this is Rick's graphic. And This is the points that were needed to finish 10th on the DP World Tour for the last 8 years. Patrick Reed, at this juncture in the season, already has more points than three of those seasons. And then you layer that on top of sometimes you don't even need to be top 10 to be able to get that tour card, right? Because it's top 10 not already exempt. So Rory's on that list every year. So it could go further down. And so the interesting thing that I think that presents is, what does that mean for, I mean, 17th in the world now, he's got to be in all the majors. What does that mean for what he tries to do this fall? Because even though that's the best part of the DP World Tour schedule, and he supported that tour sort of faithfully, he could kind of make his return to the PGA Tour cameo, get some sponsor exemptions and play in some fall events. The only downside of that is that playing as a non-member, none of those points could accrue towards, like, imagine if you could play those events and accrue points and then get into signature events through next 10 of fall going into next year. He will not be able to do that this fall, but I'll just, it's going to be very interesting next few months for Patrick Reed, who's playing as good as anybody on the, and
well,
on the
he'll,
face
he'll
of the
be
earth.
A member come, cause his suspension
cannot,
runs, it
cannot
runs
be a
August.
Member in the fall. Cannot apply for reinstatement until 2027 is the way that return press release was worded by the PGA.
He can get sponsors invites.
He can play the fall as a non-member and accept sponsors. So,
but he's eligible for the President's Cup. Make any of that make sense? Makes zero sense. Like, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
I
it's either one or the other.
Yeah. I mean, but this delves into, like, special temporary status world where it's like, you're letting him play the event. He can earn the points, but he doesn't. Yeah, I mean, not my. On the topic of OGR points, let me sneak this in quickly. Yeah. I just want to congratulate Smiley on his debut win. You get some credit here. It was, of course, Elvis Smiley that won his first event on the LIV Tour. And just, it's interesting, right? Because this is the first week that LIV is getting OWGR points for their top 10 finishers in those events. And so Elvis now jumps from 134th in the world to 77th. John Rahm, who finished second, moves from 97th to 67th in the OWGR. And then Peter Uihlein was the last player on the podium. He moved from 199th to 154th in the world. So, I mean, does that feel about right to you?
It's my first time seeing the results this week outside of, I'm just kind of going through to see how everybody played. Gosh, it was a shootout. Whoa. You had to take a deep.
Yeah.
David Puge, man. It just feels like he's going to have a big year, doesn't it?
Yeah.
David Puge. Yeah.
That's the, okay, that's some good analysis there.
Let's talk and live. There you go.
This has been talk and live. All right, let's talk fifth major, Smiley. Look, there's been a lot out there. I don't know that I'm like, I don't want to take the bait fully. I think everyone's going to frame this differently. Where do you stand on just the debate itself and like why we even need to do this?
No, I am not for players being a major championship. I respect history way more than trying to get Players Championship and have the PGA Tour have an ownership of a major. That this just seems like a marketing play at this point for the PGA Tour. It's a great event. I love the Players Championship more than anything that I see the entire year. I think it's awesome. But do I think it should be a major? Well, it probably should have been a major a long time ago before, you know, we get to this live golf battle that we have where we're just trying to get ownership of things. When I think of the players, when I look at resumes in general, Scottie Scheffler, 20-time PGA Tour winner. Is he 4-time major winner?
Yes, Masters twice, and the only one he's missing is the U.S. Open.
4-time major winner, Olympic gold medalist, and a 2-time Players Champion. It is a notch on the resume. Is it a major championship? No, but it's got a line. Like, the Players Championship isn't going in to the PGA Tour tally. It is 100% something that stands alone on your resume at the end of your career as an accomplishment that any player and fan can recognize. And I think it's as simple as that. And I think fans, players all recognize that. But right now we're just in this ploy to try to make something into a major that it's fine as just the fifth major. Like, we can recognize that, but let's not screw up history. I don't want these tallies being screwed up. I don't want people passing Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods or even throw in, you know, guys like Nick Fowler, like guys that have a legitimate, insane major record that somehow they're going to be passed up for guys that win the Players a couple times. Not for me.
It's so contrived. It's like, I don't understand why we need to do this, because again, it disrespects the other majors, and it also disrespects the players.
Yeah.
Like it there's no need to draw, like, why can't we just, because all those guys, to your point on the history, all those guys were playing majors and the players under the guise that, like, this is the Players and this is a major. And so, like, I mean, I'm not saying that they want to win golf tournaments no matter what, but like, if you're going back and telling those guys, oh, this is a major, like, do they approach it differently? Is there a different sort of context for competition? Like, I don't know, maybe. And then backdating it and saying, you know, now these guys have X amount of additional majors or whatever. The whole thing is, the LPGA did this where they, like, added a fifth major. And I just don't, it just, there's nothing about it that feels good in elevating it to that status in terms of looking, like, because all these things that really, when we're looking back at major wins, it's just to provide a historical context on a player's career. So then what you're doing by making that a major is completely ruining all the historical context of that thing. You know, it's like chasing a home run record, you know, for a season when, like, they played 20 or 40 less games than they did in the modern, you know, MLB. Like, all these things where you're kind of botching it. It just doesn't, you lose something every time you do that. And I think that it's, you know, it's in some ways, I think it's much more impressive to win that than the Tour Championship. So for me, like, it's the flagship. It is far and away the best and most competitive PGA Tour event and product you put out there. And if I'm the Tour, honestly, I'd be pushing less for it to be a major and more for it to just have this sort of standalone branding of, like, it's the Players. It's a one of one. You know, like, it has the strength of field. It has a sort of unique, you know, iconic venue that has a ton of drama down the stretch. Like, why do we need to then throw that in another conversation where it's going to be competing with things that are sort of apples to oranges? I don't understand it. I think it's disrespectful to all five events involved.
I am much more closer to the PGA Championship moving around the world than I am to getting the Players Championship to be a major championship. Like, that to me is, like, where I'm at. You know, every one of these events has such a unique identity for the majors.
That is the best point.
And the PGA is just, like, what is it? You know, like, some years it's awesome. Like, Southern Hills was an amazing venue, but it just, like, we're going to be going to Olympic Club for the PGA Championship at some point. It's like, wait, no, that's a U.S. Open venue. So it just kind of doesn't have the same identity as the U.S. Open. And not, of course, the Open is what it is. And Augusta has all the tradition that it has. It's like, I'd love to see the PGA go places around the world. Go to Australia. Go to wherever, right? Like that to me would be really cool.
If you could figure out the TV piece of the PGA, I completely agree with you. Because then you have five completely distinct events where the Players is, of course, your PGA Tour flagship, one of the best, if not the best fields in golf. That's a standalone thing. Of course, I don't need to say much about Augusta National and Master. Like that's, you know, the pinnacle, right? And same venue every year, you know, a unique, you know, fan experience, all these things, right? US Open being the domestic major at all the greatest American venues that we have and are able to access. The Open Championship being the most storied, long-running one that plays all the greatest places in the British Isles. And then the PGA, to your point, like, again, if you could take it to Australia, always, if you could just basically say, we'll go anywhere but the United States or the British Isles, and maybe with some exceptions, but like we're just going to go to a bunch of really cool global venues, then it is completely distinct. And you're also seeing golf in a lot of places where you don't necessarily see it. That could be super cool.
It just kind of depends on what the PGA of America's initiative is. It's a company that's in America, right? Like, so it would make sense that they would just stay here. I don't know what their platform is globally, but I know what it is in the States, right? And it would make sense that in their history that they would just keep it in the States. Yeah. So why change things? So I think it's much more of a pipe dream, but it is a fun conversation to have.
Yeah, undoubtedly. Yeah, I mean, it'd be cool. I mean, and they still... Look, they still have a domestic property every 4 years at the Ryder Cup, you know, when they're hosting that. So, I mean, we're doing a lot of pipe dreaming on today's show. I want to ban phones forever. We can dream. We can do our best to dream. So, that was the entire rundown for today's show, Smiley. I think we covered everything pretty thoroughly here. Any other thoughts you want to add or things you want to tease for the upcoming shows?
I would like to shout out Jackson Brown and the North Dakota State Bison. Going from the D2 all the way up to the Mountain West D1.
Is that official?
I think. I think it's official. And if it is, the week that North Dakota State goes on the road to Hawaii, I think that we might be looking for a producer that week because I don't think Jackson's turning that one down.
Oh man, you know, I love that for Jax, and I feel like you're making the move up to D1, and you want someone to lead that team that's got a lot of good coaching experience. You know, you want a guy that has coached at the collegiate level, but you probably want someone who maybe has like some Super Bowl wins, some experience. You know, maybe like if you had like 6 Super Bowl wins as a head coach, maybe another 2 as a defensive coordinator, and you could bring a guy like that in to coach North Dakota State. I mean, just imagine, you know, how you could kick off that first year. So I'd just be looking around if I was Jackson to see if you can't find a guy that maybe fits a profile or that exact profile.
And of course, Jackson, our producer behind the scenes, he'll pop in. We talk about him often, played football at North Dakota State. So that's a connection here, folks. He's got rings.
He's got some rings. He's also the, in addition to being the producer, he is the Smiley Show strength and conditioning coordinator, which we look forward to. We look forward to seeing what programming he puts together for us at the Masters this year. Really excited about that. So that's it. That's the show, Smiley. And we have Mark Blackburn dropping. I think, I mean, the full episode drops Wednesday. We might roll out a bunch of separate things. We got to see a lot of cool breakdowns of all the different guys he coaches, including Justin Rose, fresh off the Farmers win, and Matt Fitzpatrick, who had a great week at the WM. In addition to Max Homa and Daniel Berger flashed a little bit this week. See him in contention. So
love Boog.
That's the show. Appreciate y'all hanging out, jumping in the comments, kind of giving us some stuff to talk about. And we'll check out Mark Blackburn on Wednesday, and then we'll be right back here next week to recap the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. See you soon.
This has been The Smiley Show.